but their toolkits turn up all over the place. Somebody must have taken them there. Modern humans are the only candidate. It is also known that Neanderthals and modern humans coexisted in some fashion for tens of thousands of years in the Middle East. We don't know if they time-shared the same space or actually lived side by side, Tattersall says. But the moderns continued happily to use Neanderthal tools, hardly convincing evidence of overwhelming superiority. No less curiously, Acheulean tools are found in the Middle East well over a million years ago, but scarcely exist in Europe until just 300,000 years ago. Again, why people who had the technology didn't take the tools with them is a mystery. For a long time, it was believed that the Cro-Magnons, as modern humans in Europe became known, drove the Neanderthals before them as they advanced across the continent, eventually forcing them to its western margins, where essentially they had no choice but to fall in the sea or go extinct. In fact, it is now known that Cro-Magnons were in the far west of Europe at about the same time they were also coming in from the east. Europe was a pretty empty place in those days, Tattersall says. They may not have encountered each other all that often, even with all their comings and goings. One curiosity of the Cro-Magnon's arrival is that it came at a time known to paleoclimatology as the Bouteiller interval, when Europe was plunging from a period of relative mildness into yet another long spell of punishing cold. Whatever it was that drew them to Europe, it wasn't the glorious weather. In any case, the idea that Neanderthals crumpled in the face of competition from newly arrived Cro-Magnons strains against the evidence at least a little. Neanderthals were nothing if not tough. For tens of thousands of years they lived through conditions that no modern human outside a few polar scientists and explorers has experienced. During the worst of the ice ages, blizzards with hurricane-force winds were common. Temperatures routinely fell to 50 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. Polar bears padded across the snowy vales of southern England. Neanderthals naturally retreated from the worst of it, but even so, they will have experienced weather that was at least as bad as a modern Siberian winter. They suffered, to be sure. A Neanderthal who lived much past 30 was lucky indeed, but as a species, they were magnificently resilient and practically indestructible. They survived for at least 100,000 years, and perhaps twice that, over an area stretching from Gibraltar to Uzbekistan, which is a pretty successful run for any species of being. Quite who they were and what they were like remain matters of disagreement and uncertainty. Right up until the middle of the 20th century, the accepted anthropological view of a Neanderthal was that he was dim, stooped, shuffling, and simian, the quintessential caveman. It was only a painful accident that prodded scientists to reconsider this view. In 1947, while doing fieldwork in the Sahara, a Franco-Algerian paleontologist named Camille Arambourg took refuge from the midday sun under the wing of his light airplane. As he sat there, a tire burst from the heat and the plane tipped, suddenly, striking him a painful blow on the upper body. Later, in Paris, he went for an X-ray of his neck and noticed that his own vertebrae were aligned exactly like those of a stooped and hulking Neanderthal. Either he was physiologically primitive, or Neanderthal's posture had been misdescribed. In fact, it was the latter. Neanderthal vertebrae were not simian at all. It changed utterly how we viewed Neanderthals. But only some of the time, it appears. It is still commonly held that Neanderthals lacked the intelligence or fiber to compete on equal terms with the continent's slender and more cerebrally nimble newcomers, Homo sapiens. Here is a typical comment from a recent book. Modern humans neutralized this advantage, the Neanderthals' considerably heartier physique, with better clothing, better fires, and better shelter. Meanwhile, the Neanderthals were stuck with an oversized body that required more food to sustain. In other words, the very factors that had allowed them to survive successfully for 100,000 years suddenly became an insuperable handicap. Above all, the issue that is almost never addressed is that Neanderthals had brains that were significantly larger than those of modern people, 1.8 liters for Neanderthals versus 1.4 for modern people, according to one calculation. This is more than the difference between modern Homo sapiens and the late Homo erectus, a species we are happy to regard as barely human. The argument put forward is that although our brains were smaller, they were somehow more efficient. I believe I speak the truth when I observe that nowhere else in human evolution is such an argument made. So why, then, you may well ask, if the Neanderthals were so stout and adaptable and cerebrally well endowed, are they no longer with us? One possible but much disputed answer is that perhaps they are. Alan Thorne is one of the leading proponents of an alternative theory known as the multi-regional hypothesis, which holds that human evolution has been continuous, that just as Australopithecines evolved into Homo habilis and Homo heidelbergensis became over time Homo neanderthalensis, so modern Homo sapiens simply emerged from more ancient Homo forms. Homo erectus is, on this view, not a separate species, but just a transitional phase. Thus, modern Chinese are descended from ancient Homo erectus forebears in China, modern Europeans from ancient European Homo erectus, and so on. Except that for me, there are no Homo erectus, says Thorne. I think it's a term which has outlived its usefulness. For me, Homo erectus is simply an earlier part of us. I believe only one species of humans has ever left Africa, and that species is Homo sapiens. Opponents of the multi-regional theory reject it, in the first instance, on the grounds that it requires an improbable amount of parallel evolution by hominids throughout the Old World, in Africa, China, Europe, the most distant islands of Indonesia, wherever they appeared. Some also believe that multi-regionalism encourages a racist view that anthropology took a very long time to rid itself of. In the early 1960s, a famous anthropologist named Carlton Kuhn of the University of Pennsylvania suggested that some modern races have different sources of origin, implying that some of us come from more superior stock than others.